Okay. Oh God, I don't remember what number this
One, seven, three.
I hit record and I'm a hot mess.
173.
One, hello and welcome to the Brothers Geek Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Schmaltz, with my two brothers, Christopher Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher. Didn't hear that, Christopher.
Hello.
There it is.
And then hello, Andrew.
Hello.
We definitely heard that. We're brothers. We're geeks. We talk about geeky things. This is episode number 173. We're recording this on July 5th. It's not January.
Tuesday, right, Patrick?
It's a Tuesday. Okay. We're going to do... I think we've done this once before, a two-shot. We've done a two-shot once before.
We did, like, a series of two-shots that just kind of grew organically. Like, all of a sudden, we were just talking about two things a week. Because we were all watching The Expanse at the same time. Mm. And we were all watching, like, something else at the same time. And every episode became about those two things for, like, four or five episodes in a row.
So we're going to do a two-shot about Stranger Things Season 4, very specific. And then Obi-Wan, the TV show, Obi-Wan Kenobi on Disney Plus. We're going to talk about these things in their entirety. Have you guys both watched the updated Stranger Things episodes to the end? Yes. So we're going to talk about both of those. Spoiler warning for both of those shows right now. If you haven't watched all of it, go watch those things and then come back. You have been warned. Okay. I think we should just start off with Kenobi here. Just overall thoughts, I would say this is a pretty, like, if I were to just describe it in a short blurb, just kind of a meh show. Like, do you guys feel like that, or did you really like it?
I felt it was kind of meh. It's not the best Star Wars I've ever seen,
yes,
by any means.
Yes.
By any stretch of the imagination. I would put Mandalorian Season 1 above it in terms of quality. I think that I would put it above Bad Batch. I would put it above Book of Boba Fett. Maybe better than Book of Boba Fett,
but Book of Boba Fett was not very good. If we're comparing, yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I think I would put it above Book of Boba. I would put it above Boba Fett. I would put it above most of the seasons of the Clone Wars. Honestly, I really like Clone Wars, but the strength of the series by far. I mean, Ewan McGregor, he's an A-list star. He can carry anything. And he is fantastic as Obi-Wan Kenobi. He hasn't played the role in like 15 years.
The strength of the series was in the actor who played young Leia.
Oh, God. Well, yeah.
Oh yeah. She was great. She was good.
Vivian, I'll get her name. Yeah. She's fantastic.
Definitely like one of the better parts of the show. She was great. Okay. Here's what I'll say. I want to paint a picture for you coming into this show. I thought the prequels were terrible. I do not think that they were good. I think that Clone Wars was okay. Not made for me as a cartoon when I was like an adult. So I watched only a smattering of it. I think there's a lot of people that really love that and they remember the prequels like fonder because the Clone Wars made them better. Okay?
Yes.
I think that Ewan McGregor playing Obi-Wan was the best part of the prequels, and the prequels were a mess. They were unwatchable, terrible movies of Star Wars. So, that being said, I came in here kind of like, why does this show exist? Why are we doing this? I like Ewan McGregor, but also, I didn't finish my thought. We know where everybody ends up. Darth Vader can't die, Obi-Wan can't die, Leia can't die, like all these people who are in the show when the stakes are gone, like like, what are we... We're just spinning wheels because there's no, like, actual consequences to anything. So that bothered me the whole time. Like, I know Leia's not going to die. I know that Obi-Wan's going to save her. I know that this lightsaber duel between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader cannot end in one of them dying.
I agree with you,
you
Patrick.
Know?
I agree with you in terms of, like, the stakes of we know these people won't die. Mm-hmm. The stakes that exist for me and... was how will they tell this story and not invalidate or make it feel cheap,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, make the stuff that we know and love, the original trilogy that this takes place before, how will they fit it in and still make it a worthwhile story to tell? So that's the only stake that exists for me. And I think, I feel like they did. I feel like they definitely, the story they told about Obi-Wan Kenobi being this broken man and kind of, restoring his faith in himself and restoring his faith in, you know, the future and in hope itself, and Luke and Leia being that, I think it actually really did a really nice job of fleshing out how important Leia is, not just Luke. I mean, the original trilogy largely focuses on Luke's hero story, giving the young actress Vivian, her name is Vivian Lyra Blair, I looked it up, given her so much to do and making this a story about Obi-Wan and Leia, I think really had a lot of, it impacted me a lot and raised kind of the profile of how important Leia was in terms of the Skywalker twins. I think it added a lot of that for me as, you know, original trilogy, as an original trilogy fan, like giving so much more, at least depth and, you know, context to who Leia is, you know, at 10 years old and who she becomes, and seeing that in the young Leia. I really like that part of the show.
I got a little bit of Gotham vibes, like baby Batman, baby Leia kind of vibes a little bit. Like, why can't we just tell a different story? I don't know. Like, why is she in this? Why is Luke in this? Like, I think that it's, I don't know. Chris?
Yeah, my expectations for the show had nothing to do with plot. You guys are focused on plot. And I, as a filling in the gap show, I could care less about what the plot was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Purely a show that it ultimately is, it's a character study. Filling in motivations, filling in gap in the timeline, not from a plot standpoint, but from a struggle. Mm-hmm. Character struggle. That's what interested me about the show, because all the things that you said, Patrick, are 100% right. I could give a shit about A to B.
Mm-hmm.
That had zero interest for me for the show, because mm-hmm. we know where it ends up.
Mm-hmm.
He dies on the Death Star.
Yeah.
So, I don't care about that. I wasn't worried about that. What I really wanted was Ewan McGregor, I was hoping for some development of sort of his, all the things that he clearly had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
After,
do you think the show succeeded in that?
I think it was a partial success.
Right. I they just like touched it. They just like touched it, but didn't get to the meat. I mean, Star Wars is always a little light with that. It's kind of like character. You know, it's always about the Star Wars adventure, the lightsabers and the spaceships, and
except for Last Jedi, Rian Johnson understood all of that, right?
Yeah, so character study we've seen has been the Last Jedi.
Yeah, and
Rey
so,
and Luke and Kylo's best character stuff was in the
hoping,
Last Jedi.
I was hoping for that high level of like drama,
mm-hmm.
with little bit of Jedi. And how does he process all of this? And, you know, real loss, right? You know me, over the course of this podcast, I'm always focused on how do these characters in a human way deal with loss,
mm-hmm.
deal with tragedy, and talk about loss, right? He's got the weight of think about all the loss he was processing, how to process that, and he was broken. And so there's a touch of that. McGregor was good about conveying some of that. I think the writing wasn't quite up to it. And then they have to they felt like they need to throw in this rescue tale and adventure tale into it to sort of flesh it out and to give it some Star Wars-y sort of feel, rather than just relying on the universe to have context for this very human struggle. It could have been a universal tale of how to process loss and how to deal with loss. It's kind of lazy to throw in the, oh, of course he's going to interact with baby Leia. It's like, okay, no, because I had that same, the Gotham is exactly the right reference and how we've criticized Gotham. I hated that show for that reason. It's like, right. No. You do not have to
just tell a story about cops in Gotham.
Story, exactly.
You don't need Batman in it. You don't need yes.
Batman is this thing that is out there, and it doesn't. You don't have to reference it. Tell the tale that leads up to it, and sprinkle it.
Yes, sprinkle. That show literally ends with like Batman in his suit. Like the last episode he starts talking about Gotham and I get crazy.
Why I was enthusiastic about the show was I love the character, right? And that's, you're exactly right, Patrick. The best part of the prequels is Obi-Wan and Ewan McGregor. That's it. Mm-hmm. The best part.
Right.
I am with you. The first trash.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I was excited about it and I'm I think it's meh.
Unfortunately.
It kind of wants to be all this stuff and it doesn't satisfy on any fully satisfy on any level. So that's where I'm at.
So I have two more things to say. One, I feel like I'd be remiss to not mention at least there's so much that you can nitpick about this show, like the writing wise and logistic wise, and like why do the stormtroopers not believe him? Why don't they know? Why is there a fence that he could just walk around? Why does he shoot it? Like, how do they attack a base with two snowspeeders and there's no air defense? There's no TIE fighters to go after them. How is he smuggling a little girl under his coat and no one sees this? How is she walking down a hallway and Reva gets ahead of her? You could go on and on about those little things. Like, why? The thing that bothers me the most about the show is the problem I had with Mustafar and the original fight between Vader and Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan lets Vader die in the fire, or like almost die from burning alive, half cut up, leaves him alive to suffer instead of, I don't know, putting him out of his misery or like stopping the
war. He can't kill his brother.
Then they double down. And he has a chance to rid the universe of Vader.
Kill his brother.
Can't do it. You are a Jedi for good, and you can't defend the masses of people that he's gonna kill in the future.
He can't kill his brother
because
there's some part of Anakin that still lives, and he can't kill Anakin. Can't do it.
You are a sworn Jedi Knight, and you're protecting the universe from good, and you can't.
It's attachment. It's the whole point. He's attached to Anakin so intensely.
No Jedi. And that is the best part of speaking to the humanity, because it's a journey, not a destination, Patrick. Mm. Nobody has that pure detachment as a Jedi.
Obi-Wan is the purest Jedi that we've seen. I mean, Yoda, but Obi-Wan. Think about it. And he can't do it. He loves Anakin. He can't kill this man he loves. He can't do it.
He loves him so much. All these thousands of people will die because of his love, because he can't suck it up and do what's...
Nobody's perfect.
He doesn't know that. He's hopeful that...
We know it. We have the context.
Yeah, he's hopeful.
This is another problem I have with, like, Revenge of the Sith is, like, Obi-Wan gives up and Yoda gives up and runs away, and the universe is fucked because they couldn't finish the job. Like that's what you wrote? You wrote that the good guys run away and hide?
Exactly.
That's your end?
It's the writing corner that Lucas got himself in. Like, why, if Obi-Wan and Yoda are so powerful and they're these great Jedi Knights, why are they hiding out to train Luke to, like is this their grand master plan? It's the same thing of, like, you know, and say what you want about the sequel trilogy. I love it. The Rise of Skywalker has major issues, but I love the sequel trilogy. J.J. Abrams wrote himself into that corner. It's like Luke's on this planet hiding out, and then Rian Johnson has to figure out a way to make it believable and in character for Luke. Huge parts of the fandom, but that's the conceit. Like, you write yourself, they wrote him into this huge corner. Luke leaves and is hiding. Mm-hmm. The greatest hero in the history of the galaxy, who, you know, redeemed his father and, you know, was the key to defeating the Empire. He goes and hides because his son because his nephew becomes Kylo Ren. Mm-hmm. That's the corner they're in, and they got to find their way out.
Yeah, I
mean, the same corner exists. It's the same corner that they wrote themselves in. How do you get the prequel trilogy to the point where Obi-Wan and Yoda survive, and they lose and they run away?
Yeah,
and it doesn't work.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't work. Like, in both cases, I don't like that Luke.
No.
Rian
Johnson pulls it off.
No, what? Well, okay.
Pulls it off.
We can argue about that. I won't get into that. But I will say that, like, what Star Wars is trying to paint is that being a Jedi and having this responsibility is hard on your soul. Like, the responsibility, the weight of the universe, you know, to fight evil and, like, defeat evil in the face of evil is, like, weight. But, like, I don't know if I buy that. I guess I do. Like, it's just not done well enough for me to, like, believe it. So that's my problem. I don't get why he can't protect the world and defeat the bad guy. I get it. Maybe the relationship between them in the movies, at least, wasn't very good. In the Clone Wars, like I said, they built up their relationship, but they're brothers, right?
I tell this. I've said this multiple times, and I'll say it forever. The people who go back and say they love the prequels, they love it because they love the Clone Wars.
Yeah,
The Clone Wars
made it better.
Gave us seven seasons of Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi being badass Jedi partners, and they're like banter buddy cop-ness that's so fun to watch for seven seasons of that.
It made it better.
In people's perception of the prequels, it totally retconned it because of how good Clone Wars
was. Well, and that's Dave Filoni, you know, and that's a lot of him fixing, like, the stories and writing a better story than Lucas did. And I think that because of his love of Clone Wars and the love of, like, the cool parts of is why the Mandalorian has, like, the Naboo Starfighter. Like, that's a cool ship. You know, I thought that was a cool ship, but it's in a dumb movie. Like, it's like you take the stuff that works and you keep using it.
Yeah, but
and like thinking about the droids killing all the Mandalorians, and then a Mandalorian growing up and hating droids. That's cool, in a stupid movie. Like, stupid movies but taking the cool parts, seeing the cool parts in between. I will say the look of the. I tried to watch the last episode, like, on my lunch break at work on my phone during the day, and I couldn't see what the hell was going on because that show was so effing dark sometimes. When it was night, it was dark as hell. And it looked really cool when there was lightsabers, but like when they're just running through Tatooine, when Luke is just running through Tatooine, it is, you need to turn on a light. Like, I can't
there's no ambient light, yeah.
There were definitely, I mean, that was a good part of the series, the Obi-Wan series, was I enjoyed the lighting and the use of light and shadow and the approach to, again, Patrick, you're going back to your point about the cool parts of Star Wars.
Yeah,
lightsaber fights and emphasizing that. And they did a great job of having moments of, okay, that's super Star Warsy.
Yeah,
I'm there for it.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like up until the last episode, I was thinking the show wasn't very good. And I feel like the last episode really brought it home. Like, the fights was really cool. The interesting resolution to Reva was finally cool. I don't think that character is very interesting. And she made some stupid mistakes. Like, what was her grand plan? But her resolution was cool.
It's writing workshop 101. You can have 2 weak first acts, and then if your third act lands, it can save your whole thing.
I think that it brought it up a couple notches for me because the last episode was the better part of it. Like, it is, I mean, but like, I mean, if you're watching this week to week and you're not that invested, like, you might just fall off. I feel like, I don't know how well this is being received, but.
I think, like anything in the Star Wars fandom, dude, there are people that love it, and there are people that think it's the worst thing ever, and it's ruined the Star Wars for them.
That's a bigger conversation about, like, what has happened to Star Wars fandom, you know?
We could talk for hours and never get to the point of it.
Right.
Nobody hates Star Wars more than people who say they love Star Wars.
It's so interesting. It's something, like, the fans feel like they're owed something, and I'm guilty of this. I feel like I want it to be something it's not. And I remember it from my childhood in such a way that I want to capture what I felt then, but I just never will. And like, they're trying to figure it out, but it's not what I want it to be. I think that Rian Johnson is great. I think the Last Jedi is interesting. It's not the story I wanted. That's the bottom line. It's not where I wanted Luke to be. It's not where I wanted it to go. It took it in a direction that was like, okay, fine.
Yeah, I think The Last Jedi could have landed better if Rise of Skywalker
had been a better movie. Well,
I think if they had landed The Rise of Skywalker and not, in a lot of ways, tried to invalidate The Last Jedi.
Yeah,
It could have been phenomenal.
They undid much of what The Last Jedi tried to do. It was so heartbreaking to see that. Okay, so
will you guys? So here's the thing, though. Will you ever go back and rewatch this again?
No.
What do you think?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Valid.
Yeah, it's. What about you? You think you would?
I don't think so. I don't feel an overwhelming need to watch it again. I mean, maybe if I'm feeling super nostalgic for, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, you know, if I watch some, because there's episodes of the Clone Wars that are really good Obi-Wan episodes.
A year from now, when they come out with season two, will you rewatch season one? Getting ready.
I don't think they'll do a season two.
Yeah, you don't think they'll do a season two?
I think this is a one-off. I think they told a good, complete story, and I think season two of Obi-Wan Kenobi is A New Hope, episode 4.
Can we talk for 1 second about Andor? I feel like when I heard that was announced, I thought, why the fuck are you making a Cassian Andor TV show? And then the trailer for it looks cool. Yeah. I was like, I hope this is good. Like, it looks good
fun. I think you tell a really, really interesting birth of the Rebellion story, and, like, Andor is the vehicle into that. You tell, like, the secular non-force user side of yeah. the birth of the rebellion.
The rebellion. I want to see the birth of rebellion.
That would be, and how that comes together. Mon Mothma
yeah.
is an awesome character, and having her be also like a central part of Andor, and like if there's like political machinations and like the secrecy and the conspiracy side of
well, here's...
trying to topple a fascist government across thousands of light years, I think that could be so cool.
But it's also setting up what I just complained about, is we know Cassian Andor is not going to die. Like, the whole, it's a prequel. Why are you doing this? Like, we know he has to get to Rogue One. Like,
yeah, you can tell interesting stories that have stakes, because how do they get us there without land it and make it feel like a good story?
Yeah,
when you know end, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so bless you. Stranger Things season 4. We were going to record this before the part two, which can volume we, and I'm going to complain about that, because it's not a volume two. It's two long episodes, one really long episode, but it's like, did they just do this because they wanted to string people along, paying for two more months of Netflix? Is that why they did that? Because they should have released all of those at once.
I don't understand why. I don't have a thought as to why they did it. I just, it doesn't make the fact of it being like they're going to have like the first two acts of this three act structure or whatever, and then they have the resolution act, you know, the last thirds of the story. Like, I don't get it.
Patrick, you may know this, but it could be as simple as they were still working on the final one.
I was thinking about that. They needed like another couple of months to like finish it up.
Shots and visual effects and shit like that.
Really?
The last episode is heavy on all of that, right?
So, right, yeah.
Got that huge action sequence with 11.
2.5 hours long. Yeah. And I think also, I was thinking about this, that last episode, I was trying to figure out, where would you break it up? There is no point during that final episode that's like, okay, this could be two. No, there isn't. And so I understand that dilemma they were confronting, and I think doing it as a movie with all of the sort of wrap up involved, and it sets up season 5, I found it a effective, complete episode.
For all those reasons.
But I
suspect it's because they had to work on it.
I think that if you took part one and part two, separated them, having my brain before I watched part two, I was thinking this is not a very good season, because too many storylines going on, and because of that, you keep cutting back and forth between them, and six things are moving at snail's pace instead of like things happening. There was episodes of episodes where like nothing was happening between six different storylines, and I think the cast has gotten too big. You're telling all these stories that are like not really connected, sort of connected, and they didn't get resolved until the last two, but the last two brought it all home. But like, because they were separated, I had time to think about it, and I had a month and a half of like, well, that wasn't a very good season of Stranger Things.
I never felt that there was any episode that something wasn't happening and moved things along. Like, I definitely felt that, and I'm definitely attuned to it. We've talked about it here, about those middle episodes on any of the Marvel shows that were on Netflix. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, none of this is necessary. I never had a moment during part one that was like, okay, that was a nothing episode. There was always a nugget or two or three of, okay, that's revelatory, or that's interesting. So I didn't think it suffered from that problem at all. And I didn't have a problem with the disparate storylines because I thought they did a nice job of figuring out how to bring it together. And, you know, they've told the story of them as a party fighting the big bad. They told this was a different story. So I appreciated that fact that they have different challenges and they're dealing with different shit. And so I thought that was actually pretty well done.
The thing
that I bumped on, and I mean, overall, I felt it was a very satisfying season. And I like where it ended up, and I like what they set up for season 5. I felt a little bit of, like, the three, you know, and when it's really good, I mean, the first few seasons of Game of Thrones, where you have like three or four distinct storylines that don't intersect at all, but they're still very well told. You can have disparate storylines that don't interact, but when they're very well told, they all feel satisfying. I mean, the first few seasons of Game of Thrones are perfect examples of that because characters don't see each other for 10 episodes and it still is a great season. The thing that I bumped on is that there's so many characters now and I'm not in love with all of them. So when characters that I love, because there's maybe 12, 15 characters now that they try to give, you know, not equal time to, but they give time to, like, I don't really care about what happens with Jonathan. I don't really care. You know, his new friend who's like comedic relief. I don't really care. I don't even really care. I mean, even some of the original kids, like, I don't care that much about Mike. I actually find him kind of annoying.
That whole storyline, besides like the cool tracking shot of the shootout,
but like that, I love Will Byers. I think he's great. I want to see more of him. I wish there was more of him. He had some great moments.
I think he's one of the weaker characters.
I love Will Byers. I wish there was more because I think Noah Schapp has really, really like grown into that role and he's fantastic. But I could care less about Mike. I honestly don't care that much about Lucas. I wish there was for this season. I mean, Nancy had some good moments. I really was bummed out that they kind of like Robin felt so much more goofy than she did in season 3. Like, I don't.
Yeah, she kept like tripping on stuff or getting lost. Like, why were they making her like super geeky?
She's so like capable and kind of confident, and she gives so much shit to Steve during season 3.
Right,
and that I feel like I don't know. Maybe Maya Hawke was like, I want to play like a goofier side, or like they're like she has such great comedic timing that we should make her more silly.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I feel like the Robin of this season really didn't feel like for me the Robin from season 3, and I fell in love with the Robin from season 3. She's my favorite character on the whole show.
I think you kind of I think
kind of short shrift this year.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Andrew. Is I didn't care about half of the storylines that were going on. Maybe that's why. Like I 11 storyline, like the end was great, but like honestly, like she like. What was she was in a she was in like a tub for 3 episodes. Like, what is happening? Like, move it along. Like, come on, and like the prison stuff went on and on and on and on, and I was just like, oh my god, like just get out of here. It's so annoying. And they talked about opening that Demogorgon door for like 2.5 episodes. It's like just do it. Feed him to the Demogorgon already. Like, why are you... And, like, they kept cutting back to all these other characters that I didn't give a shit about. I didn't give a shit about the Jonathan, Mike, pizza, like, surfer pizza party. Didn't care. Like, and what you're saying is right. Like even, like, the stuff with Dustin and Steve and all them, it's just kind of flat and, like, okay, what is going on? And Eddie, any, like, the best character of this season, of course, they killed. They introduce a new character. Like,
it's, I did not fall in love with Eddie like other people did.
I loved Eddie. Oh my god, he was great.
What did you think of Eddie?
He's playing Master of Puppets on the freaking top of the.
I think those. He's got some fun moments, but for me, he was. I did not fall in love with him like other people did. I just didn't.
I thought the Eddie character was great. But that it's a little tropey to have that older senior in high school. But also the fresh and different energy on the show. And I see your comments, Patrick, are indicative of you weren't all invested in all the characters in the first place.
Yeah.
Because for people who are like really invested, all of those stories, it's all about character development. It's all about what their journey is. They're trying to, the writers and the show, the Duffer brothers, are trying to tell a real story about real people struggling with all the things that teenagers struggle with in the context of apocalypse. That's a Buffy trope, and that stuff is great. And, you know, being invested in the characters means that you're going to care about those things that were in part one. And so I'm invested in the characters, and I want to see sort of how they navigate all of their challenges, not just the Upside Down. Because the Upside Down is not always staring them in the face. Teenagers are very much concerned about, does she like me? Does she not like me? It's pretty basic. And so those issues, even if she is a superhero. And so it feels real to me. It's not it'd be really a one note show if it was all about Elle kicking ass with her mind all the time.
Well, I got a question for you guys. What did you think about, I don't know if you'd call it a retcon or whatever, but kind of like giving context to the other seasons, like Vecna / Henry / One has kind of always been there, pulling strings and exploring the Upside Down, and has always kind of been a presence that we really didn't know was there, but was. You know, how'd you guys feel about that kind of that context for Henry's character that they gave towards the end of the season?
Well, I called early on that guy who was floating in the Upside Down was probably another psychic, like, because he was having psychic powers. And then when they showed the flashback in part one of the guy whose family got killed and he cut out his eyes. It was Robert Englund from Freddy fame. He had cut his eyes out or burned his eyes out. You never really see the boy in the flashbacks. They don't show the little kid very much. You don't see him affected.
Like that part of it really worked for me. Like that mystery build up.
I called it. I saw it. The problem is like I saw it. And so I called it then, that little boy did this to the family, that little boy is Vecna. And then I had to wait 5 episodes until they told me that. So I'm sitting there waiting. And then as soon as Elle goes into the pool and then there's this blonde kid, I said, he's the one who kills everybody in the beginning, not her. He's a psychic too. I called it like I don't know if anybody else picked up on it early, but like the problem is I saw it, I guessed it too early, and then I had to wait episodes for it to resolve itself. So
just because you recognize something that makes it like not entertaining for the rest of
the season? I know where it's going.
You have an educated guess. I guess there's something wrong with that aid in the research lab. Of course, he's a creepy looking dude. It's a classic again, Duffer Brothers, it's all referential, right?
Yeah.
The young put together, but also weirdly looking like an acting kid. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a fucking signal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's intentional. There's something off about the brother.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's that is the Duffer Brothers foreshadowing, because they're calling back to lots of 80s shit with their young creepy kid.
What I loved about this season, which it felt a little more than previous seasons, the full-on horror movie trope stuff.
Yeah.
With the attacks and the murders and the gruesomeness of it. I normally don't go in for that kind of stuff. Like, it's, but for whatever reason, I loved all of that. I love, like, we're gonna turn the breaking of the bones
and then the eyes, like,
so creepy, but it was so good.
To your point, Patrick, it was still an open question, and I think effectively done, and could have been like, oh, holy shit, if 11 had killed everybody.
Yeah.
It could totally have been that.
Didn't kill everybody.
Yeah.
I how they played that out, I was like, holy shit, 11 killed everybody, and then she forgot about it to protect herself, and part, like,
that was totally a legit storyline. So
yeah, she is a murderer and doesn't remember.
That was creepy and foreshadowed a little bit of that's weird. This dude is weird. I had those vibes, but there was no way that it absolutely, and they, I thought it was effective. Absolutely, they could have gone down the path of she really was a monster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, she busts that girl's face with the skate in the second episode or something.
It's
in her to explode people, because
that's a misdirection. That's just good storytelling.
She killed those guards.
Yeah, she killed those guards in season one, and we sort of just like forgot about it. Yeah.
She was being abused.
Yeah.
Yep.
And her response to all those other kids could be like, no, I am angry, and I'm going to smoke all of you. And I totally could have done that. Yeah.
I think that the answers to some of the questions this season were good. I like that Vecna gave an answer to the Mind Flayer, because like, I've always had like a curious, like, what is this giant smoke monster? He gave it life. He gave it like this purpose. You know, it is him. He's part of this hive mind, weird other dimension. There's a Demigorgon already. Like, he didn't make it. It already exists, but he took over their minds or whatever. There's other dimension looks not shitty for a little bit.
Give it all motivation. I mean, right. that's the key element to that.
Pathos. Yeah,
he gave him motivation.
But then he's able to form it in such a way that it looks like the real world, like it has all the real world things still. Like, there's still a lot of questions about the upside down. What is it really? But
the metaphor is that it's a dark mirror for our world.
Yeah, but like, and it doesn't look like that until he's there, right? Like, what did he do to the universe to make it?
If they get into that, but I mean,
I think like that's fascinating.
He's the dark mirror to 11. You know, that's what they're setting up for season 5 is 11 as this, you know, quote unquote savior character versus the devil character.
I think people kind of shit on this episode in season 2, the episode where 11 goes and finds like, what is that number 8 or whatever. You could skip over that episode completely and the story still happens. Like, it still takes place, but yeah. I always thought it was kind of fascinating that there was other psychic people, but she had different powers than 11. She was able to make people see things.
I love that. Who knows if the Duffer Brothers will bring back any of those characters for season 5, but the fact that they've never been referred to again in any way.
Right. I want to see more different psychic abilities. So I'm glad that they sort of reference this, but I'm unhappy that it's like only a villain that we see. Maybe we'll see more in season 5. Is that the final season? I think it is, right? Like,
they've announced season 5 is the last
They'll resolve it.
If the story is about these kids, they're not going to be kids anymore.
Yeah, they're adults. They definitely grew up in the few years that it's been since we've seen them.
I mean, Ash should even said it, and it's the same thing with like, what's her name? Emma Watson, you know, playing Hermione. It's like you see her when she's 11, and then when she grows up and she's like at the end of the series and she's 21, Ashton's like, Millie Bobby Brown is very pretty. I'm like, yeah. And she was kind of an awkward kid with bad teeth. She's grown into this beautiful woman, but she is a woman. She's like 19 years old, you know?
I was fascinated to find out that she didn't shave her head again, that was a wig, like a really good wig. Like, because it looked like she shaved her head.
100%
But I saw a video, a behind the scenes video today, and I was like, what? Oh, wow.
I thought she was wearing, so she's got super long blonde hair right now. Yeah. I thought she's been wearing a wig. I was like, is she wearing a wig?
No.
Through all of like the press she's been doing, she's got like really long blonde hair. And I'm like, is she wearing a wig? Because her hair doesn't grow that much.
No shit. Yeah. Yeah. She had hair underneath all that. Yeah.
Wow, that's wild.
Which is crazy that they were able to pull that off. Did you guys know?
Very compressed.
Yeah. Did you guys notice that Hopper picked up the Conan sword to kill?
The Conan sword.
Why is the Conan sword there? Why?
I don't know. Kill him with the sword.
They exactly knew what they were doing. Everybody who watches this is like an 80s nerd who's like,
nerd. It was, that is fan service.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I don't know where it came.
Conan the Barbarian once all the way through.
Oh man, Conan the Barbarian is dope, dude.
Dope.
I've seen Conan the Destroyer more times than I've seen Conan
the Barbarian. That one was so dumb. That was so dumb.
Conan the Barbarian is super dope.
Yeah.
I gotta watch it again.
Basil Polidorus score. Woo. Yes, that's a good one.
I got one more question. We got to do a question.
Okay.
I want to pose a question because this has been like a meme on the internet. Spotify even did like a playlist or whatever. What is the song that would save you from Vecna?
Oh,
what's
shit.
What's your guys' song that would save you from Vecna?
A good question. Have
you thought about this? I'll tell you mine. I think that my song, honestly, is probably Seven Nation Army or Icky Thump by the White Stripes.
Icky Thump or Seven Nation Army? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know exactly my song. Go for it. All I had to do was think about it for a moment. It's When the Levee Breaks.
Oh. Yeah.
Yes. That's great. That's a great one.
The first song that comes to mind is Bolero by Ravel, but I have a problem with this. I'm probably going to die before it gets to the good part of that song. It takes 14 minutes to get to the good part of that song. Okay.
You need the ringtone version of that.
Yeah.
You need the custom created ringtone.
The 3-minute perfect version of Valera.
You need a song that gets to the point much faster.
Yeah.
So
When the Levee Breaks serves that purpose because it's
amazing. Dude, think about this. Think about the first 30 seconds, the guitar rip at the beginning. Yeah.
I'm gonna change my song. I Want to Break Free by Queen.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. That is a good one. I like that.
Man, I've loved that song forever. Yeah. Okay. Good question, Andrew. I think we should wrap it up. Do you have any trivia for us, Andrew?
Well, trivia is kind of easy, but do you guys know the title and the artist of the song that 3 million? Like the artist, like had their record. You know, they made 3 million downloads or something since the. Do you know the title of the song and the artist?
Kate Bush, Running Up That Hill.
There you go. Yeah. Did you know that before the show?
I didn't know Kate Bush. I'd heard that song before. I couldn't remember Kate Bush.
Yeah.
I knew the song, but did not immediately recognize the artist.
I mean, she's made so much money since the show has come out. I will say, though, like, the song that sits with me is not the Running Up the Hill song. It's Master of Puppets being played by Eddie. On top of that, like, when that motorhome was awesome. But also,
before we wrap up, let's a shout out to the again the actor who plays Max, Andrew. What's her name?
Oh, I'll have to look it up. I know who you're talking about.
A center of gravity for this season. Holy moly!
She was great. She was great.
What a great job.
I cared about her story.
Yes. Sadie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sadie she was
Sink.
Great.
She's fantastic.
Fantastic. She, yeah. I mean, she was the emotional center.
Yeah, she really was.
Talk about terrific. She really had lots of work to do, and she did a great job.
See, yeah, her episode, where the Dear Billy episode, where she gets saved, might be the best one of the best episodes.
That was a great great episode. I mean, one of the best parts of part one for sure. So
yeah. I think it's the best episode of the season.
Oh yeah. Absolutely, that was the best episode I think of the season. Yeah.
Well, okay, before we, I have you're making me think of something I forgot to talk about, Christopher. What do you think of the Dungeons and Dragons treatment in the first episode? Like, I felt like it was really good. Like,
every time they like refer to show, it fantastic. I've sat at a table at lunch exactly like they were doing, talking about the previous weekend's a campaign. In my life, I was with my friends. We were talking about what we did the previous weekend and then what we're facing in the upcoming weekend. Right. And those moments of conversation were thrilling to me because they revived memories in me that's just awesome. Epic time in my life where I was literally playing Dungeons and Dragons almost every weekend, overnight, all day long. For weeks.
That's awesome.
I really enjoy, like, I feel like they did a pretty good job with the treatment of the Dungeons and Dragons, making you feel the excitement of it, the cross cut between the basketball game, like what they're feeling, what normal people feel, and then what it feels like to play Dungeons and Dragons when it really works. And so I really enjoyed all that. I wish there was more of that. I wish it was a show about Dungeons and Dragons, but that's a different show. So, yeah. But okay. Well, if you want to help Andrew with this trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com, and then email the podcast brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter brothers_geek@twitter.com, brothersgeek.com, brothersgeekpodcast. On Twitch, and I think that's it, right?
Brothers Geek Do Stuff on Instagram.
That's right, Brothers Geek Do Stuff on Instagram. That's about it. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Get the, you know, pandemic's still a thing, guys. You know, wear a mask.
Oh,
get the jabs. Take care of people.
Yeah, do the things. Do the things.